We have episode 2 of Intentional Grounding coming up here for everybody on the ticket. Your congenital hosts are in here right now. That, of course, David Moore.
Hello,
and
Michael.
My leader. Hello, David. And my great leader to whom I bow down, the great Robert Wolanski, both of the Dallas Morning News.
You are my leader. You have always been
No.
That's ridiculous.
No, no.
Did you ever think you would say both of the Dallas Morning News?
No, I didn't.
I thought
he was a lifer.
By the way, have you ever mindlessly gotten in your car, started driving to work, and started making the same route to the Observer?
I do make the same route every day. I drive by, past the Observer to and from work.
Oh, you
day.
Do? Okay. Yeah. Well, that kind of sucks.
Why?
Well, because...
I drive by
ever...
my high school twice a day,
no,
too.
Do you ever turn off in there?
No, never.
Because I've done that one time since moving to the new building. Like, accidentally gone down Maple or whatever, and then just kind of woken up. And
no, I never have. Too.
I was probably baked, though. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Midday.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Got the midday buzz working.
Totally. No, I drive by it. You know, I've been to the building twice since I left. I had to go pick up something once, a check or something. Then I had to go to another office in the building. Wasn't weird. I mean, it's. I've been at the Morning News 6 months now. It feels like...
Feels like that's where you belong, huh?
Yeah, you know.
Like you've been there for a long time.
I love it. I really do. It doesn't feel weird at all.
By the way, you owe me lunch, Dave.
And me.
And that would be?
Because we had the bet 6 years ago that you would be better off financially than Vince Young. I chose you.
Dave was just making it rain outside.
Oh, I know. I know. I think we actually made
that
bet.
You want to know how these guys get in trouble?
I made
Unfortunately,
that bet.
They were bikers out there.
I made the bet at Club Onyx with you. I knew that one day you would be better off.
I wrote that down on a napkin. I do remember.
That is one of the most profoundly sad stories, and I still don't understand how that happened.
That quickly.
Seriously. They say that after taxes, it's $7,000 every day you'd have to spend to get rid of that kind of money. About... $17 million.
So how do you do that?
Huh?
How do you spend $7,000 every day?
Oh, my God.
He spends it on golf.
Yeah. It all goes to golf.
And golf and other off sports.
And following around mediocre jam bands.
Right.
That was a 90s passion of mine. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't really have the time to follow around jam bands anymore.
When's the last time you did that?
Like... Took a summer and took like 10 days or whatever.
Yeah.
And...
It wasn't in the 90s either.
Oh, yeah, it was.
No, it wasn't. This was 6-7 years ago I remember you doing this.
No, I never did that. I mean, no, not since probably since I got married in 2000. I know I haven't taken... I can't take that much time off. Now, I'll go on vacation and within the span
Where
of that vacation...
Where jam bands are playing.
I've done that before. Like, I've gone to Europe and accidentally run into Widespread.
Accidentally?
Yeah.
No one accidentally runs into Widespread. And
yeah, sure they do.
And you ought to see this picture. They were playing for a crowd of about 6 people, and there, standing right up next to the stage, is him.
In Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It was good times.
You guys passing a spleef back and forth?
There was all kinds of stuff being passed in Amsterdam for Widespread.
So the crowd was kind of like the Jazz Odyssey and Spinal Tap?
Yeah.
Little amphitheater.
I remember the first time I saw Widespread, I had to review them. I was at the Times Herald. They played Trees. This was like 91.
Oh, yeah. Because they played the Rhythm Room the first time they ever came here. Of course, you remember the Rhythm Room.
I do.
You know who they played with?
I used to see Gordon at the Rhythm Room.
You know who opened up for Widespread?
At Trees or the Rhythm Room?
At the Rhythm Room.
Pop Poppins or Jacko Pierce?
Trippin' Daisy.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yes. Who I'd never heard of either when I went to see him. But it was really cool now that I know Tim.
Widespread opened for them?
No. Trippin' Daisy opened for Widespread.
Are you going to go to the opening of the Deck Park when Polyphonic Spree plays?
I'm sure I will. Yes.
That should be a scene.
I will support the Deck Park and Polyphonic. I feel I owe it to both, the city and Tim.
You do.
And Los Lonely Boys are coming through, right? I believe you.
No, Los Lobos.
Los Lobos are.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
When?
Tell me
even
Los Lonely Boys.
The January 19th, 2 shows at the Kessler.
Kessler Park, 2 shows.
At the Kessler Theater.
Uh-oh.
You and I are that? You and I will go. We'll date.
Woo!
Ooh, yeah.
I'm very excited. Hey, so before we go, we have a special guest, 2 guests on
two
tonight.
2 guests.
One of them being Charlie Waters.
Yeah.
All right.
We're going to talk about Steve Sable and America's Team.
America's Team and what that did for this franchise.
Yes, he was there, a part of America's Team.
And something everyone assumed would be in place by now, and is not. We will have another guest to speak about that.
What a tease.
Well, our business is concluded for today, and we do thank you for your time and attention this afternoon. Thanks to Danny, Ty, Jake, Alexis, and you guys on the phones for allowing us to invade your personal space. Now, do stay tuned. Intentional Grounding is on the way, so check out those boys. And then be by the channel tomorrow at 3 when we are back with another edition of The Hardline live from Stan's Blue Note. Till then, you guys stay hard, keep jamming, and we'll see you.
Good evening. I am Robert Walonski of the Dallas Morning News, and I am sitting alongside Dallas Morning News, Dallas Cowboys beat writer, my good friend David Moore, whose habits and hobbies I'm already getting well familiar with 2 weeks into our endeavor here at the Ticket.
Remember I like ice in my water?
I did remember that.
Ice and certain other drinks as well?
Well, and it's anything I can do to keep you happy. You are, after all, the brains of the operation.
Which, again, tells you a little bit about this operation.
Well, it is extraordinary that the Ticket has let us come on for yet a second episode of Intentional Grounding, which we will do every Wednesday from 7 to 8 here on KTCK 1310, The Ticket.
You're now listening to the highest-rated football show in its time slot on Wednesday nights
on
the Metroplex.
On The Ticket.
I assume that's true. I hope it's true.
You know, the National Association of Broadcasters is in town this week.
Yeah, I know you're trying out. Go ahead.
I am using this as a demo reel if you'd like to hit me up. At Robert Walonski is my Twitter handle. Yours is?
David Moore, DMN. At David Moore, DMN.
We are available to do any radio shows
or
podcasts or bar mitzvahs or any other things. Tonight we have, I think, a very special show because we have two guests on this particular episode.
Not one.
Well, we figured we didn't want to impose ourselves on people too much here early on.
There's only so much they can take.
We need to break them in. But obviously, yesterday we mourned the loss of Steve Sable of NFL Films. We will have with us in our second segment the great Charlie Waters, one of my childhood heroes, to talk about what it was like to be playing for the Dallas Cowboys when NFL Films slapped upon them the label America's Team, all the good and all the bad that came with it. And then as we progress toward the 8 o'clock hour, we will have with us a very special guest to discuss with us as we begin the fourth season in Cowboy Stadium, why it is still called Cowboy Stadium, and why Jerry has yet to part with the naming rights for that particular facility. So all of that will be coming up here on the
and
second
more.
Episode. Well, don't oversell it. Don't oversell it. But let's begin in some ways where we left off last week, David. We were amazed and astounded by the extraordinary football team that lay before us in New York. And yet a few days later, that awe and astonishment had turned to despair and defeat as the team that you had predicted to go 16-0 last week. I may be a little off on that prediction.
So poetic on this setup.
Well, I like to think that both of us are employed as writers, therefore we might want to put our... I just made that up. I'm improvising. I'm thinking on my feet, much like the young Tony Romo, who is no longer the young Tony Romo.
Exactly.
But obviously, we had very high expectations going into the Seattle game, and we don't want to spend too much time rehashing the debacle that was that particular football game. Nevertheless, before we head into our discussion of what lie before us in Tampa Bay, or with Tampa Bay as we play in Cowboy Stadium, you know, you were very excited. You said you were not a guy who knee-jerked on the reaction on the outcome of one particular game. You wrote a column as we dissected it last week that this was going to be a football team unlike the Cowboys teams that had preceded it, and that we should genuinely believe that the Dallas Cowboys were not the heartbreakers of seasons past. And yet, it took all of a few seconds for them to prove you woefully wrong.
First of all, I was told last week was a soft opening and was really only played within these walls and on the elevator on the way down. I did not realize it was actually going out to the masses.
Unfortunately,
so I felt misled on that point.
I'm sorry. That's all Jeff Catlin.
But I will not change my initial stance.
That's too bad.
There is a difference in feel and belief and what you see in front of you.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then.
Okay.
I have heard on this station for the last 3 days, everyone said, even when the score was 10-7, that they didn't feel that they certainly felt like the Cowboys were going to come back. They were going to roar back. This was not going to be a game that ended in a defeat. Certainly not a 27-7. Really shellacking. I mean, it felt like
it was not competitive in the second half. Second worst loss in the Jason Garrett era.
But I felt watching the game, and I'm curious to get your perspective when you're actually at the game, but I felt very early on like this was going to be the game that it turned out. I assume you probably didn't feel that way while you were watching it there.
I did not. I did not think they would come roaring back. I thought they had put themselves in position to be competitive and give themselves a chance to win in the second half after a horrible opening, because you drop in the 95-yard scoring drive, and I just felt going into the half that they had put themselves in a position. They had taken Seattle's best shot. The only way Seattle could win the game, as we talked about going in, was to get some cheap touchdowns off the return game in special teams. I thought it would be Leon Washington in the return game, not a blocked punt for a touchdown. But thought they got something, or you know, that would give them a chance to win. I thought the way the Dallas defense was playing at the half, the fact that they were only down 6 points going into the locker room, I thought they had put themselves in position to still have a chance to win the game. It became very clear in the third quarter that they were not up to the task very quickly.
So what happened to them in the third quarter when it all began to very quickly and very awfully fall apart?
You know, I think that the biggest play I thought was the 36-yard run
right.
that Marshawn Lynch had. And I know people are out there saying, why didn't Rob Ryan blitz a rookie quarterback more? Why didn't you go after him? Why didn't you force the issue? Well, I believe they blitzed either 6 or 7 times in that game. One of the blitzes came on that 36-yard run by Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
Now, suddenly you get that, and then you have to play differently, and Russell Wilson hit one of his few passes over the top of the defense, leading to that touchdown. And then from that point on, then you had the play with Sean Lee later, and it just got away from them, and Dallas did not respond in the way that Jason Garrett would want them to respond.
See, for me, I just felt like, you know, the fumble, obviously Felix Jones's fumble, the block punt, the interception, all happening back to back to back. It all felt very much like this was going to be a replay of the teams that we had fallen in love with and yet fallen very quickly out of love with over the last several years. They win a game, you don't expect them to win. They lose a game, you think that they're going to dominate. It just felt like I was on the same roller coaster of which I have become incredibly tired over the last several years, to the point where I just kind of expected them to be this mediocre thing that they have become.
Which leads you even more dissatisfied because you don't have a read on them. Like you say, when they win games you don't think they should against the Giants, then you allow yourself to get excited. You allow yourself to go, okay.
And we should know better.
You should know better. I still say the breadcrumbs leading out of this offseason and training camp to this point are positive. But I will say, strictly from a standpoint of when you look at the evidence in front of you, you can't in good faith argue that the team you saw in the opener is going to be this Cowboys team. You can't argue that point any more than you can argue that the team you saw against Seattle is going to be the team you saw see for the rest of this season. They are at a very early crossroads, and you know absolutely nothing about this team at this point. You can believe things are going to be different. I still believe there are some signals and signs in place that they will be, but you really can't argue it based on the evidence that we've seen in two games.
So what is your feeling going into the game with Tampa Bay?
They should win.
And they probably won't.
You're such a pessimist.
Well, it is the nature of the job, isn't it?
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying you're a pessimist.
They will probably be destroyed. But that's the feeling, the expectation that one gets when one is a Dallas Cowboys fan for life.
Sure.
That this is just a team that has thrived in mediocrity for so long that you just have to stop believing at a certain point.
Speaking of mediocrity.
Are we going to talk about Felix Jones?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Your thoughts on Felix.
My thoughts on Felix?
Yes.
Why is he on this team? I don't understand
that point.
Well, I just don't understand this whole Jason versus Jerry thing on him. Jason says after the press conference after the game that when things like that happen, you have to look at other opportunities. Jerry says he is going to be on this team. He is going to return kicks. And then Jason says that today, I believe, that he will be returning kicks.
He'll be their primary kick return.
Yes. Which is unfathomable to me at this point. Am I wrong?
I certainly understand your consternation. I would argue...
So you're saying, yes, I'm wrong. That's just patronizing.
Not that you do that.
Right.
That's right. It may be taken out of our hands whether we quit, but anyway.
Well, go ahead.
I think the issue you have here is, you know, if Felix Jones does not return kicks for you at the moment, why is he even active going into games? Because he's going to do nothing else for you on special teams. As long as DeMarco Murray is healthy, through two games, he has one carry from scrimmage and four receptions, and many of those came late in the Seattle game when it was out of hand, and they just didn't want DeMarco Murray to get hurt. So if he's not returning kicks for you, you really have to sit down and say, okay, why is he active going into this game?
I say that.
Because we can't use him on special teams.
I say that for the last 3 days.
Now then, if you're doing that, okay, here's a guy you know who has made plays for you in the past, not to the point that you are happy with, but can make some plays.
Roger Staubach made plays for you in the past as well. I don't believe he will be coming off the bench.
But you would probably prefer him to Felix at this point.
I would. Tony Dorsett, absolutely.
So I think they're at a stage right now where they're concerned if they shut Felix down and go, look, you're just not getting it done right now. We're going to go with Philip Tanner or Lance Dunbar right now, that Felix will not get his confidence back and he'll be lost for the season. That they still feel if they nurture him and bring him along properly, the whole nature versus nurture argument, which I know you love, that they can build him back to where he can be a productive player for them. But if you take draconian measures down now and shut him down, you're not going to have that player over the course of the year.
So how long do
and
you
now
get?
What if DeMarco Murray goes out? Well, that's the question. And to me, that is a weekly debate now in the Cowboys coaching offices. If this continues, how much longer do we allow this to go on? At some point, you're going to say, we can't allow it anymore. It's hurting the team. We're not going to get him back. Let's go with Tanner or Dunbar as the backup. Go into games that way.
But it's not even the fumble. It's the fact that he is simply an unproductive return man. I mean, he has the lowest average, I believe, of any return man in the NFL at this point.
At the moment, I would believe you're all correct, sir.
I mean, it's not just the fumble. It's the fact that he can't do his job.
Yes.
Or he certainly hasn't done it.
He has not to this point.
But there is the belief. Does Jason believe it or does Jerry believe it?
I believe both believe it. I really do. But Jason is going to be much more pragmatic he's going to come to the conclusion quicker of just because we've seen it in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen now. Jerry clings to that longer than Jason will, but both cling to that hope and belief based on his body of work leading up to this point.
Well, Jerry's a loyal nostalgist as well. He lets players linger far too long.
Yes. Jason Garrett is not.
All right, so before we wrap up our preview of the Tampa Bay game, where is Dez been? I think Drew Pearson said it the other day that
this is good.
That Dez Bryant has as many late game catches as he has, not had, but has, because he has disappeared. I believe he has four catches in the last six quarters.
Four catches for 33 yards over the last six quarters. If you look at these stats at the moment, since you brought up Felix earlier, Dez Bryant's numbers, he does not rank among the top 50 receivers in the NFL in either receptions or receiving yards. And this is from someone who is a key component of your offense, who in this training camp showed he was in better condition, showed a consistency he hadn't, showed an approach he had yet to show in his time with the Cowboys, a professionalism, all of which led you to believe that this guy is primed for his best season. It has not translated yet.
But is that because Romo does the same damn thing that makes him so frustrating to begin with? He keeps throwing and throwing and throwing, to Bax and to Jason Witten and to DeMarco Murray and to guys to whom he should not be throwing the ball, especially when you are down and playing the way you are in Seattle?
I would argue that Tony Romo would prefer to throw the ball to a receiver who is 20 yards downfield versus dumping it off to DeMarco Murray if that receiver is in the proper position to make the catch.
And he's not.
I would say he is not at times.
As opposed to Jason Witten, who is in the proper position to make the catch and simply does not.
In this particular game, he did not. And he will be probably not the first to tell you, but he won't back away from that either. He did one of the worst games we've seen Jason Witten have.
That was a dreadful showing. All right, so we're going to go from the recent past. The dreadful showings to one of my childhood heroes, Charlie Waters, will join us next here on Intentional.
Who doesn't remember this music growing up?
Probably many listeners, actually.
That kind of destroyed the setup, but technically you're correct. Yes, I understand. But people who had listened to this show who has not heard this music.
This is Intentional Grounding, by the way. I am Robert Wolanski, the Morning News, and I am sitting, of course, next to my beautiful colleague, David Moore, the beat writer for the Cowboys for the Morning News. You are listening to Intentional Grounding on KTCK 1310 AM, but more importantly, you are listening to the greatest soundtrack in the history of television.
Yes, yes. And this leads us to very sad news.
Came across yesterday.
NFL word. Steve Sable, the president of NFL Films, died yesterday at the age of 69 from brain cancer. Many tributes, all well-deserved, just about his impact on the sport, the impact that made on our culture.
On my backyard football ability.
And what you have also is, while all of this was put in the context of NFL Films, which is understandable because that's what he was over, but I would argue when this really took off the ground, when NFL Films really started entrenching itself in the public consciousness, would be in the 70s, which also coincided with the rise of the Dallas Cowboys. And we had, we'll get into that more in a second, but real quick, Jerry Jones was on the NFL Network yesterday and was talking about Steve Sable's impact, into which Jerry said, quote, "I honestly don't know of anyone who loved, understood, or appreciated the NFL more than Steve did. He was one of the greatest storytellers of our time, not just in sports, but in any part of the American society. I've often said that they only throw ticker tape parades for war heroes, astronauts, and people that win games or championship sports figures because they're larger than life. Well, somebody has to take the accomplishments of these people and make them larger than life. Someone had to take the moment and turn it into a legend. And that's what Steve Sable did for the NFL better than anyone."
And in 1978, I was 10 years old during that season. Grew up watching the Cowboys, born and raised here, as was David. And I will never forget in 1978 when that highlight film came down, and for the first time we heard the phrase in John Facenda's extraordinary voice, which I will attempt to emulate.
You can come much closer to replicating it than myself, so take it away, Robert.
Well, it was the narration of the opening of the highlight film where he said, "They appear on television so often that their faces are as familiar to the public as presidents and movie stars. They are the Dallas Cowboys, America's team." And we'd now like to bring on a member of that original America's team, David.
We now welcome to the show Charlie Waters.
Gentlemen,
I cannot.
I don't know if Steve was more dramatic than y'all, but it's definitely competition between the two.
I cannot tell you. When David said you were going to come on, and this was a dream come true for me. We've never spoken before, Charlie, but he's you were always one of my heroes. I had a giant Charlie Waters poster in my bedroom as a young lad, and not in a creepy way either.
That worries me a little bit.
No, it was not creepy.
It should, Charlie. It should.
The other sex, you know.
Well, it was you were next to the Farrah Fawcett poster, if that helps.
Okay, Joe Namath's Danny Ho's poster. So,
well, obviously the reason we wanted to have you on is because I was fascinated during that particular period with America's team, with the Cowboys, my team. But I've always wondered what it was like, and I've never gotten to ask a member of that 1978 team. When did you find out that you had been coined America's team, and what was the immediate impact that you noticed upon that happening?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first, let me say that the NFL films, they were so dramatic, and they brought the NFL to, you know, to my little hometown in South Carolina. I just didn't get exposed to the NFL, really. We saw one game on the weekend, and that was it. But, boy, when they had that weekly summary of the whole NFL, and then they had the NFL game of the week, and they had that slow motion, and the, and we all, you know, you're great at imitating it, but that was incredibly, I fell in love with the game, and I wanted to be a professional athlete, and I wanted to play for Dallas, and then I joined the team, and then it might have been right after the first Super Bowl win that we had, when we started realizing that every away game that we went to, we had just as many people at the hotel when we checked in as we did, you know, like at a home game. And so, I really think it was hugely impacted by NFL films, of course. So.
Well, Bob Ryan.
And the NFL, you know, coining us America's team, but you got to think about it. You got a guy that wears a coat and tie every day, you know, on the sidelines during the game, and you got Captain America, the quarterback, who's, you know, drinks milk for, you know, 24/7, and
you drink milk 24/7 too, right, Charlie?
Yeah, yes, that's exactly right. Thanks.
This is quite a revisionist history.
Yes. Thanks. But you know, and we had a lot of characters on our team too. So there was just was like a perfect storm, and we had great unis too. We had, you know, such a cool uniform. And you know, I don't know if you know this, but we did a survey when I was a coach at the University of Oregon about what's the most important factor for a college kid to sign to a team. Do you think it's curriculum, or whether you're going to make it to the pros? You know what it is? Uniforms. And so, I was just as guilty of it as anybody, because here I was at Clemson, and I just loved the Cowboys uniform, and I hated it when they lost because I wanted them to win. So NFL films played a huge role in that.
In '79 was the first time it was actually used in a televised game. It was
I didn't realize it was that late.
The first game of the '79 season. It was against the Cardinals when you guys won 22-21. The announcer at CBS introduced the Cowboys as America's team. And I guess that's the first time it became really popular in the lexicon. But do you remember the first time you heard it?
I heard it on watching. It's terrible. I used to watch NFL films review on the weekends just like a fan, you know, and just hear what they'd have to say. And that was one of the first time I'd heard it. But we pretty much felt as though that was the case. We won, and then we figured out a way to win after we won, and that's an unusual trait for teams that have success. And of course, Dallas is, these days have been having a hard time understanding how to win after you win. So
yeah, we touched on that a bit. Yeah,
funny about that. It was. We could just sense it every city we went to, and you know what? Let me just say this. People either loved us or hated us, but by golly, they had an opinion of us. And to me, that's what sells the game, is the fan passion. And in NFL films, and Steve was tremendous. You know, they had did so many innovative things. You know, had that look. They created that camera that you know, when you run down the sidelines, and instead of jostling up and down, it was just running smooth rhythm on, you know, I don't know how they did it, but they had an unlimited budget, and they did a tremendous job of chronicling what was going on at the beginning of the NFL.
Yeah, Charlie,
it really was catching on.
Yeah, Charlie, I was talking to Gil Brandt today, and just asked him about the whole America's Team thing after Bob Ryan came up with this, who's still with the NFL Films, VP and Editor-in-Chief, actually came up with the phrase, like you said earlier, because he noticed every time he watched films of the Cowboys on the road, there were all these people with Cowboy jerseys. So that's how he came up with it. Certainly Tex embraced that. Gil said he was in a meeting one day with Tom and Tex. It was the three of them. And Tom turned to Tex and said, could you put some more pressure on us with that America's Team thing? So, Robert.
It's spoken just like a defensive mindset, you know. Offensive guys love to, you know, oh, who cares? Just bring it on. You know, you think about Drew Pearson, the confidence that offensive guys have. And defensive guys, look, they'll take it out on us, okay? So don't be doing this. It's just great. Coach Landry was a genius. We had three serious geniuses working for us at that time, and NFL Films did a great job of letting everybody in the United States know how good we really were, and we were a pretty good team.
So did you embrace the America's Team thing, or like you said, was it kind of split along lines? The offense embraced it, and you guys were going,
no,
well, yeah, because we have to deal with the fallout.
No, we all loved it.
Okay.
We all loved it. We knew the pressure was on us, and I really think that every practice. You know what? It was just David that answered that question. You know, David, every time we played any team in the league, they absolutely hated us, and it would make their season if they could beat us. And so, I really think that's why we ended up performing so much better when, you know, playoffs came around, and also having such positive seasons year in, year out. Now, Coach Landry never thought we played well. I mean, we get in there after a win, and we come out of the locker room, we felt like we'd lost the game after we watched the film. So, there was still an immense amount of pressure on us, but NFL Films brought us back to earth and made us enjoy it an awful lot. It's great.
What is it like for you over the course of the last many years when other teams try to lay claim to it, whether it's the Steelers or the Atlanta Braves or the New Orleans Saints have all tried to claim the phrase America's Team is their own?
That's just a weak effort. You know, there's only one genuine position. You know, and it's a compliment to me, to us, actually, you know. Somebody else tries to coin that, and it's part of the vernacular now of the people speaking. They want to become the team that is the most popular team in America. And baseball, it was always been the Yankees. All through the years when we were growing up, as you can probably attest to also, they were America's team, but nobody coined it. And for us to get it, it was great. So. Yeah, we loved it. we brought, you know, bring it on, you know, is what it was with us. So we didn't bother us a bit.
Is it what you thought of yesterday when you heard that Steve had died, that this was the man responsible in some ways for creating that myth, that moniker that was America's Team?
Yeah, and you know, one of the great things about Steve and NFL Films, they absolutely were engrossed in what they did. They loved what they did, and they were so dedicated to it. I went up there a couple times to their headquarters when I did some pieces with them, and just a bright look in their eyes when they were explaining a project they were working on, something new, and it just brought validity to what we were doing, and of course it also helped us in our salaries. Of course, we didn't make anything, all of us in the 70s. But
so Robert and I can relate, but go ahead.
They did a tremendous job of making it like almost surreal, you know, bigger than life. And it was credibility. You know, the color television was just starting to happen in the 1970s. And of course now, what is it, like 40 years? Oh, Lord. Yeah. 40 years, our country cannot satiate the appetite for football. And it doesn't matter what it's Pee Wee or what. It's the NFL is king, of course. And I really think that the NFL Films is the main reason why it's so popular.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and again, like we said, this is the passion that they showed with the sport.
Yes.
And the stature that they elevated it to is what Steve Sable was able to do with NFL films. And really, the Cowboys, as America's team, were the lead act on that when this really got up and going and became so much a part of our culture. And Charlie, we thank you so much for coming on tonight and talking about this period and just what it meant to you and the rest of your teammates and what it still means for the Cowboys today.
Thank you. Both you guys do a great job. Robert, you've got a sick sense of humor, but, you know, we embrace it, you know.
Well, thanks, Charlie. Hey, we should hang out sometime.
Yeah, we should.
Man.
Let me just also say it was a target-rich environment back in those days.
Oh, my God. I love you even more, if that's possible. Thank you, Charlie. It's been an honor, sir.
Thank you so much.
Good luck on your show.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks. We need it.
When we come back to Intentional Grounding, we will change gears just a bit and have a thoughtful conversation about why Cowboy Stadium is still called Cowboy Stadium here on Intentional Grounding.
The Ticket. It's a beautiful...
Here's the Dallas Morning News, and I am with David Moore, the Dallas Cowboys beat writer for the Dallas Morning News. And for those of you tuning in, this is the second episode of Intentional Grounding, our show devoted to all things Dallas Cowboys. But as I think you've gotten the sense over the last 2 weeks, we're going to not just do football ball, but we're also going to do some culture. We're also going to talk business. And before we wrap things up here tonight, we do begin Sunday at noon, the fourth season in Cowboys Stadium. And I recall reading a couple of years ago in the Dallas Morning News, and if I read it in the Dallas Morning News, it must
be true.
It's got to be true. That there was a couple of folks interviewed about the naming rights at Cowboys Stadium. And several people said that if they had to lay money on it, and I'm sure none of them do lay money on anything, that by the time the Super Bowl rolled around last year, Cowboys Stadium would, in fact, have the naming rights sold.
And yet, but their wife and their children.
Very clearly, that is not yet the case.
Well, now we have some children for people to adopt.
So I was very interested in why that is not the case, and if that is going to be the case. David and I have spoken to a couple of people off the air over the last few days. Actually, I just speak to people off the air quite frequently.
Constantly, yes.
Yeah, it's just
I'm just off
like,
most of the time when
like
I talk.
It's the way I like to roll. And they've given us many different reasons why the naming rights haven't sold. Many of them still believe that this will happen sooner or later. But I wanted to ask an expert. So I'd like to bring on now from CSL Marketing Group, the Senior VP and the of Sales and Marketing, John Alper. John is an SMU graduate. John,
good evening, guys.
John, how are you? Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, John, you before you went to work at CLS, you were at Hunt Sports Group, if I'm not mistaken. You were responsible in large part for the marketing deals at Pizza Hut Park. You also are best known, I think, around these parts for having been the guy who got the Apogee deal for the University of North Texas football stadium, yes?
That is correct. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to ask you, why do you think it is at this particular point, 4 years later, and very clearly this is not something that Jerry wants to rush into, and at this point it becomes more and more clear that this may not even be something he's even that interested in. And I would not ask you to speculate, but ask you sort of more in the larger general sense of why Cowboys Stadium to this point remains that and not, say, AT&T Stadium or any number of other corporate sponsors that are certainly available and interested in that.
Well, you know, I think that let's turn the pages back a little bit here. You know, I think back when the stadium was under development, under construction, certainly the rumors swirled that a naming rights partner was going to come on board. Certainly the Cowboys were looking for one. But, you know, I think as everyone knows, they were trying to find a naming rights partner in the worst economic climate that we've seen. And not only was the business environment horrible, but in fact, you know, a lot of companies were shying away from any publicly type of association with anything because it was viewed as frivolous and so forth. You know, obviously, we got over that hump. The economy's back in shape. And I think what's happened is by virtue of the fact that they didn't sell the naming rights, Jerry has realized, and ultimately they may end up selling the naming rights, but I think he's realized this phenomenal brand association. Obviously, the Cowboys already have a great brand, but now you've got arguably the greatest sports entertainment venue in the world that is also attached to his name directly, Cowboys Stadium. And I think he kind of looks at that and realizes that, you know, this brings to him value of the franchise and value to his team name. And so, as people have said, he's got a lot of different revenue streams coming in. So I don't think there is any hurry whatsoever to get this thing done.
John, the other part of this, too, is do you feel that they are insulated somewhat by, I think they would probably argue that we do leverage the stadium with our other sponsors, with AT&T and Pepsi and Ford and Miller and Bank of America, that we've got more money in our sponsorships with them because our venue is so highly visible, and that minimizes our need or any rush to go out and get naming rights for the stadium itself.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, a couple things there. One is, when you walk into Cowboys Stadium, one thing, at least I notice being in the business, is that they've kind of approached the less is more philosophy. So when you walk in there, you see you see Ford and you see Pepsi. The stadium's littered with signage all over the place. It's done very well. And so I think they've really been able to get a premium for those major founding cornerstone partners. And by most accounts, they lead the league in sponsorship revenue. The NFL and sponsorship revenue are near the top. And so, once again, they're not in any dire straits to sell the name rights. I mean, heck, even with, I have no idea what they do annually in terms of tour revenue, just giving tours to the stadium. But heck, I'd bet you their tour revenue is a large portion of some of the smaller market sponsorship revenue.
Well, I see that Jimmy Haslam has actually confirmed today that he is going to sell the naming rights for Cleveland Browns Stadium. So there clearly is a market. There are, I believe, 10 stadiums at this point that do not have naming rights sold. That will shrink as we get sort of further down and away from a down economy. Candlestick Park is Candlestick Park and so on. I believe Cincinnati and there are, as I said, 10.
Lambeau Field will always be Lambeau Field. Soldier Stadium.
But it seems to me that at this point, and I really like the fact that Cowboy Stadium is Cowboy Stadium, just as I loved Texas Stadium, just as I love the fact that it sits next to Rangers Ballpark at Arlington, which had its ill-fated run-in with the naming rights partner. So it seems to me that this is not something that we should concern ourselves with for any time in the near future. Do you think that that's probably the case, that this is going to be years down the road?
Probably. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, you never know. But heck, I'm in the business of selling naming rights, so I'd like to see every stadium sold. So, I mean, it's who knows? I may have been the one, even you talked about someone who was in the morning news a couple of years ago who said they'd bet money that it was sold by the Super Bowl.
It was not you.
I thought it might have been because I was pretty bullish back.
It could have been
that would occur, but I thought it would be sold before the Super Bowl. It hasn't been, and now I'm kind of in the impression, frankly, that the Cowboy organization really really embraces and loves having their team name, like I said, on the most phenomenal sports venue in the world.
Well, before we let you go, given the fact that you are in this business, what do you find that the environment is these days for businesses and teams who want to partner up? Do you find do you expect that there will be an avalanche of deals for those stadiums that are unnamed? Clearly, there have been a number over the course of the last decade that were considered debacles and disasters in naming. I assume that the stronger corporate partners will, over time, in the next couple of years, really want to get back into this business, with the exception, perhaps, of maybe the American Airlines Center will be available for a naming right.
Yes, we'll see how this plays out.
Well, I don't know if there's going to be an avalanche. I'd like to think there is for our business. But, once again, going back to 2008, 2009, 2010, I mean, you hit a point there where literally the faucet just turned off immediately. I mean, there were no naming rights deals being done. There were no companies spending publicly in large amounts whatsoever. Companies were laying people off and so forth. Fortunately, that's all changed. The economy's recovered. The stock market's recovered. So, yeah, we're seeing, I mean, heck, just 3 years ago, you couldn't find a bank to do any type of major sponsorship. Now, not only, banks are back in the business again, the PGA Tour and other major professional sports properties. So as quickly as it turned negatively, it's turning back around positively. So, fortunately. As I tell people, my golf game got really good in 2010 because business was really bad.
Well, John, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and joining us here on our second episode of Intentional Grounding. Perhaps as we go down the season and things begin to fall out here and there at other places, we might have you back on. But I certainly do appreciate you coming on this time.
Hey, anytime, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, David. We have made it through two episodes.
Another show.
Without any emergency breaks, I believe.
Should we do the Carol Burnett song to go off? Would that be an emergency break?
You feel free. I have to leave. I have to be somewhere. But thank you all for joining us on this second episode of Intentional Grounding. We will be back again next Wednesday at 7-ish.
after an awkward mix with Mike and Corby, I hope.
Could it get any more awkward than the first two?
I think these are going well. I think Max Miller listens and laughs. So thanks sure again, does. David. It's always a pleasure.
Always.
Always water without ice with your water?
Yes, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, TC, for doing an excellent job producing.
Wonderful
he
job.
Is up next, of course, with what is going to be an extraordinary top 10. See you next.